Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 695. Science Faction, something is wrong with the universe, and how autism can improve certain abilities.
You see, I was going to say, like, well, you know, at least there's not something wrong with the kids for once.
Yes. Oh, no, there is. Yes, there is. And it's all vaccine caused, Damien.
Yeah, but then you said it was autism, but then you said, like, it was a good part of autism. And so I'm like, well, that's not something wrong. That's like, you know, your kid was born an X-Men.
That's right.
You know, be proud that your kid was born an X-Men.
That's right. And speaking of the X-Men of this show, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, how you doing this evening?
So you're just going to say that you're the X-Men blanket? Like
yes.
That's like the way a grandmother, like, oh, I'm an X-Men. Oh, I got you the X-Men, little Bobby. Yeah. Like, oh, she didn't say which X-Men, because there's many X-Men, and they're not all equal.
You're right. I'm like if Iceman and Professor Xavier had a baby with Magneto.
Magneto is a weird surrogate. I don't know how it works. They're technically a different species than us. So he's almost superior.
There's a girl clone of Wolverine now, so I don't think we need to worry about gender issues at this point.
She's a clone, but also a daughter. They really, like, skirt the line.
Dear, that was sexist because you used the term skirt. Oh,
and also, a fun little fact, we've spent years shitting on Cyclops on this show even.
Uh-huh.
But I've been doing some reading, and apparently, like, after we got out of comic books, he became a really cool, well-thought-out villain with a lot of good storylines.
Interesting. I heard the same happened with Beast, but let's not do any spoiler alerts.
Bobby, okay, listen, I think this science thing is pretty much dead. It's all the colleges are closing down. They're all becoming Amazon factory warehouses. I think, though, we should become, Science Faction should be the premier X-Men podcast.
Just X-Men theories. We'll get rid of all the science articles. It'll just be X-Men theories and dick jokes.
So we're taking over for Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes are passing the torch to a slightly less fat and less silent version.
You know what's funny is our first episode was actually filmed in black and white, similar to Clerks.
It's audio. We didn't have to film. It's so needless. The file was huge.
They're pretending it was done as like an artsy choice, but in fact, it just cuts down on all the lighting you have to do. So, you know, it was really just a practical thing.
And speaking of which, just as there is an Askewniverse, there also is an awful neutral verse, of which Science Faction is part of the awful neutral verse. We're the Chasing Amy of the awful neutral verse. By the way, check us out every Sunday at noon Pacific time. We stream on Twitch, but also released as a podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube. But the Askewniverse is quite big. In fact, the new campaign takes place when, at least it starts off when we graduated high school, Bobby.
Oh, wow.
And I put Coach Raby in there. And if you want to know who Coach Raby is, listen to the first episode of the new season. And people don't believe that he was a real guy. They think, if anything, I'm underplaying Coach Raby. And then, like, people are like, no, there's no way this guy was real. And he couldn't have been in public education.
Pretty hard to underplay a guy who's 5'3". All right, let's go right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
But with a 400-pound bench.
Yeah.
He's a fucking dwarf. He's Gimli.
I mean, to be fair, he had to lift the bar like 2.5 inches, so...
That's fine. Yeah. I can't lift I mean, I got much longer arms, but I can't do 400 pounds. I can only do it like 20 times, 20 reps.
Article number one, the Hubble tension is more worrying than previously thought.
The Hubble tension? I thought wasn't the Hubble like decommissioned? But did they bring it back? Like, hey, the James Webb needs you. It got caught behind enemy lines. We could need you for one final mission, Hubble.
The Hubble telescope said the exact same thing to everybody around him that I said a week ago when I was on like one of the hardest surveys of my life, you know, edging on the near of 40, where I turned to the people around me. I'm going, I'm getting too old for this shit.
And nobody got the reference you were...
Yeah, because I was understands. Too old for that shit.
Who's Danny Glover? You mean Donal Glover? Is that who you're referring to? Donal?
No, so this is called the Hubble tension because it was originally discovered. Actually, it's part of the Hubble constant, which is named after the scientist, not the telescope. But it was investigated with the Hubble telescope. And part of our like explanation of why we got such weird readings, which I'm going to explain in a second, was that, well, maybe it's because Hubble doesn't quite see in this redshift range so well. And so because of that, it's actually just an issue with the telescope itself. One of the issues is we have now confirmed it with the James Webb Space Telescope, which is a much more accurate device. And now it's one of those things where it's like the mystery is even bigger because we've eliminated one of the possibilities of why we have the mystery, which was like bad readings. It turns out, no, the readings are fine. There's just something really big and really mysterious about the universe that we do not fucking understand.
I like the idea of the Hubble telescope, formerly the big head honcho, mm-hmm. the voice in space telescopes.
Yes,
and now it's having its work checked by the new wonder kid in town. I was scouting the universe when you were still just a concept and in a scientist's head.
And by the way, we not only have checked with James Webb, but in this particular article, it actually refers to the Planck satellite, which is a European Space Agency satellite that's specifically designed to look at certain microwave background radiation and stuff. So we have looked with a couple of different devices. So let's get started. What is the Hubble constant? The Hubble constant is basically the expansion rate of the universe. One of the biggest discoveries in science in the past 50 years, probably the biggest discovery in the past 50 years, was the discovery that the universe is not only expanding, but expanding at an increasing rate. That was very much not expected, because if the basic mechanics that we know of in physics, gravity should constantly be pulling everything towards each other. So at best, it should be going at the same rate nonstop, but more likely actually slowing down to a stop because there's gravity pulling stuff down. But indeed, it was the opposite. It just kept expanding. This was discovered in 98, and it blew everyone's fucking mind. If Science Faction had been around there, I think we started a year after that. If Science Faction had been around then...
In 99?
Yes.
Before? So when we were in 10th grade?
But based on my you doing badly and I call BS math, I believe that is correct.
So, this is the scientist of the show. You've just invalidated Dr. Stephen Novella is listening to this right now on a set of headphones in like a van saying, you just said checkmate. Checkmate, Bobby.
So basically what we were seeing was, oh my God, the universe is expanding at an increasing rate. And that is so unexpected. And hence
faster than my waistline. Am I right?
Hence the entire idea or concept of dark energy that could be propelling the universe to expand at a rate. Keep in mind, unlike dark matter, which is something that's like this measurable thing, dark energy is basically just a name for, we don't know what the fuck is causing the universe to expand at an increasing rate, and we're going to give it a name, dark energy, to say there's something that we don't understand and it's causing this to happen. So again, that was probably the biggest scientific discovery in the last 50 years. The rate at which it's expanding is the Hubble constant. And again, named after the scientist, not the telescope. And we've been trying to discern what that constant is for a long time. The discovery in 1998 that the universe is expanding at an increasing rate was part of that attempt to discover it. But pretty shortly thereafter, we discovered something called the Hubble tension, which is that the rate that it seems to be expanding, based on what we can calculate with our telescopes, seems to be way faster than it should be based on our other measurements of things like the microwave background radiation. This tension means that there's two different numbers, basically, based on what we see from what we know on physics and the microwave background radiation, it should be X, but it's actually way faster than X that we observe. And this is very weird. So we've been trying to figure this out for quite some time. Why is it that we're getting two different levels? Is there maybe a difference in densities in the universe and that's causing a misreading of stuff? Maybe, again, especially earlier, maybe the not so well-equipped Hubble telescope is getting something wrong in this redshift and it's, you know, miscalculating something. There was a lot of different explanations, but one of them, the major one, was we're probably measuring something wrong. It's probably our instrumentation. There's something up with that. Well, a redo of the scientific test that was just published last week has shown that actually, no, the numbers are right. This mystery is real. And once again, we have no fucking idea what's going on. So kind of interesting. I'm going to explain a little bit how we do that mapping. It's kind of an interesting, like, date this and then date this and then date this type of thing, like we do in archaeology with like tree ring data correlated to C14 dates and stuff like that. And they use something called Cepheid variables. And Cepheids are these giant stars. They're huge, huge, big stars, like thousands of times bigger than our sun. And they pulsate as they're kind of dying, as their helium gas grows and they shrink, and they basically get they flicker, and because of that, they when they get brighter, they pulsate more slowly, and we can then measure their absolute brightness based on the period duration of their blinking and their brightness, and then compare that to how far we think they are, and then kind of create what they call a cosmic distance ladder to kind of see further and further back in the universe by looking further and further away. So they're able to kind of use that to gauge how far away the universe is and how far it's expanding. And with these especially very far away things, we get better accurate results because we can measure that redshift more easily. But when we look at those numbers, it looks like the range is like way, way higher. I think it was 74 kilometers per second, something, something. A value that is way higher than it should be based on our other measurements, the other Planck's measurements. That's the European Space Agency satellite that's looking at the microwave background radiation. Basically, everything we see says the Hubble constant should be X, and it's like X, you know, times two or whatever. That's not a real correlation. It's just more than X. And we don't know how to solve this issue. And all this like report is saying, all this science is saying is, hey, we've knocked out one variable as the possible cause, which was basically bad instrumentation or bad reading of that instrumentation. The new instrumentation, which is better, now agrees with the old instrumentation. It's, you know, clarified it a little bit, but the exact same problem is still there. And we don't know what the fuck is going on. This is super interesting because this is another one of those things that is a true scientific mystery, like a real one. And it's huge. I mean, huge as in the size of the entire fucking universe. And we don't know what's happening. I love these stories because it reminds you that there's still a bunch of exploration left to do in science. There's still a bunch of things that need to be explained. And by the way, there's a bunch of people who will spend their careers and their lives trying to explain it. Most of them will fail. Some of them will succeed. And the rest of us get to sleep at night because we figured out what the fucking answer to the Hubble tension was.
Okay, here's a plot idea. Okay, you know how The Martian was a science movie? It was a movie meant to tell a compelling tale.
Mm-hmm.
But also be pay respect to science mm-hmm. as a profession. I foresee a tale like this, okay? What's the one most notable story? When I say Hubble, what's the most folksy story? It's the guy who is the engineer on Earth who solved the Hubble focusing problem, mm-hmm. You know, by using an analogy with a glass, all right? So here's the plot to this movie, okay? True to Hubble. This problem, this Hubble constant, this tension Hubble problem, NASA solves it by bringing in an outside scientist, somebody who to look at it from an outside perspective,
mm-hmm.
and they choose the proprietors of a comedy science podcast, specifically archaeology.
Yes.
All right. And we all make fun, and we're all like they're laughing us out. And then on the last day, I make a joke about maize,
mm-hmm.
and then bam, turns out the maize constant was discovered that day, and that solved everything.
Okay, what about this? It's a rom-com. They're looking for somebody to run the now like decrepit Hubble telescope because all the cool kids have moved on to James Webb. And so they hire somebody to run they're looking for the new Hubble master, right? But there's a misprint in the classified ads, because for some reason this is done in a newspaper in 2024, there's a misprint in the classified ads where the L in Hubble,
always behind
the... it gets turned into an I, because they look very similar, lowercase I. It accidentally the ad goes for a hubby master, and then like a stay-at-home husband with no science background applies for the position, gets it because out of a technicality, NASA has to hire anybody who meets the requirements of their classified ads. That's just federal law. And so they have to hire him. And it's called the Hubby Telescope. That's the name of the rom-com. And it's about him trying to juggle one of the world's greatest telescopes. I mean, it's not James Webb, but it's still like second, third best. One of the world's greatest inventions and all the discoveries he makes, along with the daily chores of a house husband who's got to pick up the kids from soccer practice.
John Cena stars
in. Oh, that's so perfect. That's so perfect. It's him or The Rock, somebody from WWE.
I don't know. The rock has come out pretty hard against telescopes, or at least in Hawaii.
That's true. Yeah, you're right. You're right. He won't fit. He won't fit at all. But yeah, this is great. I see a real bumbling version of Tom Hanks, that he's a little bit old for it. So like we do that age regression thing, that digital age regression where he goes back to like bosom buddies, Tom Hanks.
Hear me out. A bumbly Josh Gad.
Okay. Yeah.
his wife is just like, you're driving him. Listen, the kids are in school. I don't need you around the house. I work from home. You're going to have to get a job. You're driving me crazy. You know, we have a lot of holograms, and we can have concerts with Tupac. I don't see why we can't have Ernest in this movie. For being honest, I don't see why Ernest can't be a hubby as well.
Well, that part's the least realistic.
I got a new love scene, Vern.
Article number 2: How autism can improve certain neurological abilities.
The ability to identify trains, the ability to identify matchsticks and count them individually before they hit the ground. It's magic.
I feel like 30 to 45% of your comedy material wouldn't exist without the movie Rain Man.
On the topic of autism.
Sure.
Listen, I here's the thing.
Nah, it's like 70 or 80 on that.
I spent a lot of time volunteering in special ed classrooms, in them, even going into them, helping my mom. And you see a lot of autistic kids.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Hitting yourself in the head because you're having a fit about something doesn't roll off the tongue comedically. However, trains?
Yes.
Counting back? Anything in Rain Man, I can work with.
So just to review, autism is a broad spectrum diagnosis. It could range from super extreme nonverbal cases to mild cases of love for traps and trains, as Damien has pointed out.
Are you going to steal valor and claim that just because you love traps doesn't mean, you know, Paul Blart loves guns. That doesn't make him a Navy SEAL.
I had to explain to somebody that I've worked with for a while that I'm a bit on the spectrum. And they were like, oh, my God, that makes so much sense. I am like almost physically incapable of making eye contact. Like, that's insanely uncomfortable for me. In fact, it gets me in trouble a lot of times because I always look kind of at somebody's collarbone when I'm talking to them. It's just the only way I can converse. And
as an optometrist, nearly cost me my job.
No, but certainly there are some women who think I'm just like talking to their chest all the time, which is true. But like, it's
I was about to say, I know you pretty well. That's that could be true as well.
Yeah. But I mean, I do it to men too, so it's equal. You know, it'd be sexist for me to look at them in the eyes, to be honest.
Exactly. You always, how many times you've like been looking at my chest because you don't realize you're talking to me, and you've like said in a flirty voice, "What's your bench press, bro?" And Bobby, it's me. Oh, and then you look at me in the eye.
But you know, obviously there's a huge range and those things vary greatly. Some cases there are issues with like sound and crowded places and noise. And I certainly kind of have a touch of that. I am very uncomfortable in like loud, crowded places with a lot of stuff going on. It overstimulates me to the extent that like, if I were to do what I want, I would probably just start rocking and like sucking my thumb. But that has been beaten out of me at a young enough age that instead I'm just horribly uncomfortable.
And a medical diagnosis of stank thumb. Also.
But in some cases, those with the diagnosis have improved neurological capabilities over allistic, which I did not know this word until I read this article, which means non-autistic people. And they do, like, you know, Damien mentioned the kind of the very old school stereotypical thing, like of Rain Man, of like counting matches and stuff like that. But there are like tests, like neurological tests, that do routinely show improvement in those with autistic tendencies over allistic tendencies, including identifying a simple shape embedded within a more complex design, arranging blocks of different shapes and colors, or spotting an object with a cluttered visual environment, which, by the way, is literally my job. Like, and it's why I'm very good at it. Like, I will go out with people who will be like, how in the world did you spot that, you know, 1.5 centimeter by 0.5 centimeter piece of ceramic that looks exactly like all the ground around it and everything? And it's because I am very good at picking out things out of other things. I'm like really good, fucking great at Where's Waldo. Like, I'm great at like finding shit out of other shit. And that is literally my job, is to go out into the woods and look around on the ground until I find very, very subtle and hard to find artifacts.
I'm just picturing Indiana Jones, but like you're there, you know, you're, it's like he's stealing like Kumeyaay artifacts that have apocalyptic potential. And you're, but like, he's like, and the Nazi scientist is talking to you and like, you can't make eye contact with him. And it's really anticlimactic. Like he says something like, oh, but don't worry, Dr. Timothy, when I kill your family, and you like, can't even like look him in the, give him a dramatic look in the eye. You're like looking at the ground.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm so mad.
Good. Oh, I would, that's why I would rock the Indiana Jones fedora and just keep the brim low. So I wouldn't have to make eye contact with anybody. I mean, it definitely shows itself in my case. Like, I, for instance, at work, you know, ostentatiously, because I'm a very pale person and the sun can hurt me easily, wear a full face covering. I'm talking like only a slit open for the eyes, like a ninja mask. And that's the only part of my face that shows. I am so much more comfortable that way in groups of people than when I walk around in like big groups of people with my face uncovered. Like, it just makes me uncomfortable. I don't like big crowded places and lots of noise. And one of the ideas is that people who are on the spectrum kind of have brains that amplify things. They show bigger ups and downs when we put them in an fMRI when exposed to certain stimulus, and which is why some people on the spectrum, you know, they really can't handle loud noises, really can't handle crowded places. It can like kind of, you know, kind of make them break a little bit.
It turns my anxiety up to 11.
Yeah.
So you know,
exactly,
he's
right.
This is a good brain.
So like that high neural noise is usually a disadvantage in almost every case. There are cases where it's an advantage. I think it's one of the reasons that I happen to be a pretty darn good driver. And I have probably driven, you know, I've many, many hundreds of thousands, if not over a million miles, never been in a car accident. And it's not just because, like, anybody can be a good driver. Well, but
because your caretaker is behind you with the wheel.
That's right.
I've seen Rain Man, Bobby. You
That's
know,
right.
He thought he was a really good driver, too. That was actually a big plot
that
point.
That was a big plot point. But, like, one of the things I do is I constantly scan the road and look at other drivers and try and predict what they're going to do based on their driving habits. And, like, I can tell when people are on their cell phones. I can tell when somebody's about to shift lanes, even if they're not using their turning signal. When I used to ride a motorcycle, this was even more diligent. And there's a noise amplification, and I know this isn't normal. I didn't used to know this, but I know this now because I'll be driving with my wife and I'll be like, that guy's about to change lanes. Don't go over there. And she's like, what are you talking about? His turning signal. And like halfway through her, what are you talking about? He changes lanes. And you know, this is just, the noise is so boosted up in those moments that I see those little things. And that's really bad when you're at a party. It's really shitty. Like, it's like overwhelming when you're at a concert and there's like loud noises and 1,000 people around you. It makes you feel like you're about to explode. When you're driving in your car, it oftentimes means you notice the guy 3 lanes over who's about to swerve across the road because you can tell that his tires are twitching in a weird way you've seen before.
And you can count exactly how many matches he has in his back seat and the moment of contact as they're flung with second contact to the front of the vehicle. Like, it's an amazing ability that you have. That makes sense. Although, to be fair, though, I have actually seen you. You're actually pretty good at parties, and maybe that's a way of, like, I have heard of people who are not neurotypical, who have learned coping mechanisms.
Yes.
and can
100%.
Compensate with.
Yeah, that's not my natural state. Like, that's more of like you learn how to deal with your weaknesses, and you do so in a way that like plays to your strengths, and so like everything works out and it's fine. But like, it is, my natural state would be like hanging out with a few friends or staying at home or something, but I learned to make parties work. Also, a lot of times, because no one told me I was autistic growing up, and there was a lot of, we grew up in the 90s, and there was a lot of, hey, get the fuck over whatever you're doing and just be normal.
Hey, question, are you gay? Like, bro.
That sounds like a joke, but that is absolutely what, I don't know, like 5 of your teachers would have asked you in the 90s had you acted slightly different about anything.
It'd be hard to like describe to anybody like who isn't at least a millennial.
Yeah.
You know, society has changed very positively in a very fast amount of time. But like, when we went to high school, like you could, the punchline for most shows could just be, he's gay. That could have been like the joke for,
yes,
like 3 ABC sitcoms.
Yeah, and so like this study started looking at what happens when you add noise to systems vis-a-vis autistic people and allistic people and seeing what happens. And there is like a certain sensory range where if you don't get over it, you're not really picking up on stuff. And when that range was low, you know, autistic people would still pick up on certain things, whereas allistic people usually wouldn't. When you boosted that signal, the allistic people would do better, but the autistic people wouldn't. They would all do exactly the same, indicating that that signal's already boosted in their head. And that's probably what's going on. Essentially, those input signals on with people you know, on the ASD spectrum are already boosted enough that when you boost it a little bit higher, they go crazy, hence me at a fucking party or at a concert, like, oh, this is really uncomfortable. And when they're low and in a way where normal people won't recognize that 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter thing that looks exactly like dirt sitting in dirt in the middle of the woods, you know, it gets boosted in the brains of those with ASD to the point where that jumps out and you're like, oh, okay, here, I found something. And so those traits that sometimes, huge times, are deficits in a lot of ways can also end up being benefits to certain people in certain professions. And it's probably why we have these stereotypes of certain people, like, or certain professions kind of being more autistic, you know, certain sciences. Certainly there's like that kind of thing going on with certain types of like accounting, because who's going to notice that number jumping out at them? That's the problem. Like, math is absolutely one. Almost everybody I met that was a super high level math person in school had some kind of ASD thing going on. And I bet you it's like that number jumps out at them more because they need lower signal processing to pick that up than it does to your average person.
Yeah. Like anytime NASA is like building a new facility anywhere, they can't build it anywhere close to a train yard.
No.
Otherwise it just completely ruins productivity for the day.
No. Lunch breaks go to 45 minutes all of a sudden.
No windows. No windows in this building.
Yeah, and like that absolutely makes sense. That's really interesting because I also think, you know, speaking as somebody who is, you know, on the tail, now granted, very much on the tail end of that spectrum, but on that spectrum, I do think that we should kind of like research this type of stuff more and use it more because, again, growing up, they didn't really talk about it when we were younger, but growing up, I certainly knew something was off with me. And if somebody would have just been like, you're autistic, I don't know. I probably wouldn't have done as well as I did do because I probably would have thought like, oh man, that means I can't do all these things. But if somebody was like, hey, no, think about it this way. Think about it like you're better at these things. Let's focus on these things. And also, by the way, this is why you feel like you're about to explode out of your skin when you're in a concert setting or there's too many people close to you or there's really loud noises. Like that's why you feel that way.
Or when your friend Damien puts his hand on your thigh.
Yeah.
This is why you're uncomfortable. It's because you're autistic. If there's something wrong with you.
This is why you won't look anybody in the eyes.
Exactly.
You're just shamed.
When Damien wants to share a bed with you when they spend the night and you feel uncomfortable, that's your autism speaking. And you can't listen to it, Bobby. You have to be stronger than that. And you have to practice kissing with Damien.
I absolutely think we should gear a lot of our future work with kids with autism towards these things. Like, look, let's find something that they're good at, maybe even better than their classmates at, and let's focus on that so they can see where they can succeed. And then, you know, everything else, to the extent that we can treat it, we'll treat it, you know. Probably not the way I was treated with, like you said, the teacher asking if you're gay, if you don't want to go hang out with everybody, but...
Like, I feel like it was almost comical. Like, you could go up to, hey, teacher, can I go to the nurse? I'm feeling gay. Oh, my God. Yeah, go, please. Please,
go get out of here. Out of here.
It was like, if you were to write, like a wacky Liam Neeson, not Liam Neeson, if you were to write a wacky comedy about the 2000s, I'd include a line like that.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back to Science Faction 695, where you learned all about how the Hubble tension is just getting more scary. And how autism spectrum disorder can improve certain neurological abilities. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 696.
If any of the jokes that I made today about ASD were offensive, keep in mind that if you are a Patreon, Bobby, a person with ASD, tortures me every week, so my hatred is justified.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.